Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into the Pack-A-Day Podcast presented by Habish, Habish, and Rotier. Shout out to Habish, Habish, and Rotier, and a huge thank you for their partnership all season long. Listen, if you need a personal injury attorney, give my friends at Habish a call. They're real, they're committed, they're local, they're friendly, and they love the Packers just like you and me. And they've made Pack-A-Day part of the Habish family. So do me a favor and make Habish your first call when you need a personal injury attorney. When you call Habish, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. It's easy. Their number is 800-242-2874 or 800-2-HABISH. Of course, you can also visit their website at habish.com. Habish, Habish, your OTR, national reputation, hometown service. Now, of course, this did not go Green Bay's way. Packer season is over. It had a very familiar tone to it. It had a very familiar sort of outcome. It had a very familiar story throughout the course of the game that we have seen in all of their big games this year. We're going to break it all down. We're going to get through all of it. We're going to talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, what needs to change, what needs to stay the same. I promise you we'll get through all of it. Before I get to any of that, I want to take a moment to sincerely thank you. There's a lot of time, effort, and energy that goes into this every single day. I know you guys see me, for those of you who are checking it out and checking out the podcast and everything that we do here on the show, you might get 40 minutes of me. You might get an hour of me in justice. You might get, anywhere between 20 to an hour long on the audio podcast of all of the amazing guests and show hosts that we have on the audio side of the channel as well. There is a ton of time, effort, and energy that goes into all of that stuff. And I cannot thank the entire podcast team enough. Tyler Herrick for all the work that he does on the thumbnails for the YouTube channel. Again, everyone that puts anything at all, Camille Davis into the immediate gut reactions to Ross Uglum and the daily draft and the extra content that he does, the partnership with Cheesehead TV and Aaron Nagler. I want to thank all of them, but I really want to take the moment to thank all of you as Packer fans for checking out Pack-A-Day, making it part of your daily routine, being with us all throughout the season. From the moment that the Packers lost to the 49ers last season to right now, that sort of year-long journey from going to, the decision of moving on from Joe Barry to finding a new defensive coordinator, from bringing in Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney in free agency, obviously some new assistant coaches along the way as well, to a draft class that included Edgerrin Cooper and Evan Williams, to OTAs, mini camps, rookie mini camps, training camp, preseason, family night, regular season, all of it. All of it is a joy. I'm so thankful to be able to do it every single day. I'm sure I'm missing some pieces in there as well, but thank you for the opportunity. Thank you for giving all of us at Pack-A-Day a platform to talk about the Green Bay Packers 365 days a year. And thank you for all of your love, your support, your kindness, your comments, your reviews, all of it. Cannot thank you enough. And I hope you guys enjoyed this season, this journey, even if the destination is not where we wanted to go. I hope you guys enjoyed the journey as much as I did. I loved every second of it. I wouldn't want to be doing it with anyone else, with anyone but the amazing people that we have on this podcast team and anyone besides you guys that decide to make Pack-A-Day part of your lives. So thank you. Wish we had a better outcome. It's not what it is, but I'm excited to see now what this journey brings. To me, today is a new season. It flips the calendar. It's a new page. We're going to go through the next couple weeks as sort of a postmortem and figure out what went wrong, what happened, all of those sort of things, the things that went well, the things that went poor. And then we'll, kind of make that transition to, does Green Bay make any sort of probably smaller coaching changes? What free agents are gone in free agency? What free agents could potentially be coming in? We'll get to all of that, what their opponents in 2025 look like. There's a lot of time for that stuff. And I'm excited for it. I really, really am. I think the draft's going to be fun. Free agency is going to be fun. Green Bay has money to spend, but we'll get there in due time. unfortunately, we have a little bit more time to get to that stuff rather than going over a matchup with the Detroit Lions this week. So let's break down why we're there. Before we get there, one other thing really quick. Shout out to our brand new members, Cooper Feldkamp and Blair Tiffany. Thank you guys so much for signing up to become Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube memberships. If you haven't checked that out yet, make sure to do so. As I mentioned, the Packers season is officially over. It's done. Another really disappointing loss, a three-game losing streak to end the season, which was as disappointing as you could imagine it to be. There were certain things that I know myself, and I know some of you, not all of you, because I know some of you have been, you know, banging the drum and hitting me and others over the head with it. But I think there were certain things that we wanted to say, you know, let's give Green Bay time to correct, and had the hope that Green Bay could correct a lot of the self-inflicted wounds, the passing offense that could never really quite find its rhythm, especially at the end of the season. A special teams that certainly had took its lumps at times again, a pass rush that was up and down. There were signs of a lot of these things, although I thought the pass rush in moments in this game was okay. There were signs of a lot of this thing through a large portion of the season, things that went wrong all throughout the year that we wanted to give the benefit of the doubt to Green Bay, to Matt LaFleur, to the Packers, to the players, to say they'll get it corrected. They will make the requisite changes to make it so that these mistakes that continue to happen will not happen when it matters most. There can be another layer that, or a level that they can get to that maybe they didn't quite get to in the regular season, that when the lights are the brightest, when they need to up their game in the key moments, they will be able to do so. And clearly that was not the case. And I think if you're looking for the most frustrating aspect of all of this, it's exactly that. Sometimes when you get into the playoffs, you have these moments where things don't go the way that you expected them to, and you couldn't really see them coming. You know, it was a different thing that went wrong, or, you know, sometimes an onside kick goes off of Brandon Bostic's face. And so we've had our share of heartbreaking playoff losses. And sometimes, again, you know, during the course of the season, everything's going the way that it is, you know, supposed to. And then you get into the playoffs and something gets exposed that you weren't expecting, or a player has a down game or a down moment or whatever it might be. And it's hard to see coming, and it's heartbreaking in that moment. What's disappointing and frustrating about this season is it was all on display for 17 beautiful weeks of the flaws that this Green Bay Packers team had. And like I said, I will be the first to admit that I wanted to give everyone in the organization the opportunity to fix those mistakes. I believed, and still, for better or worse, genuinely believe that the people in this organization have the ability to fix the mistakes that we saw. For whatever reason, that was too hard to overcome in this particular season. They could not figure out a way to get out of their own way and to make it so that this could be a legitimate contender. And the truth is even if they did win this game, and as much as I thought that Green Bay could win this game, if you look at this team through the second half of the season, and really in the season in totality, as much as I thought they could get a big playoff win, and even I thought at some point they would get a big win, whether that was Minnesota at the end of the season, Philadelphia today, or whatever, I did think they would at some point get that signature win. It clearly did not happen, but it was getting harder to believe that this was a team that could make a four-game run at Philly, you know, at Detroit, either probably at Minnesota, Washington, or the Rams, depending on how the playoffs progress from here. We know it's not Tampa now. And then a Super Bowl win on top of that, thinking that this team with the flaws that they had was going to be able to make a run like that was hard to imagine. Again, especially what we saw really throughout the course of the season, but at the end of the season, a big win against Philly. Sure. Thought it was possible. Maybe even they get hot at the right time and can put a couple wins together. But going 4-0 in a stretch like that would have been completely out of character for the team that we had seen all season long. But still had the belief and hope that, hey, can you show us the signs that there is that team in there somewhere? Can you get one big win? And I do think a win against Philly, at least if not anything fluky or whatever, like even if they made some sort of crazy, you know, if they get that pass interference call at the end, get a touchdown, get some sort of crazy onside kicker, you know, recovery and a touchdown after that, it fine, whatever. Like, I'll take it. The Green Bay's been on the opposite side of it, so I'm not going to complain about it. But if they could have got a win against Philly, like a legitimate win against Philly, it would have felt like, all right, at least they're somewhat on equal footing as to what happened in 2023, right? That they have a up and down regular season. They made a 2-game improvement. I would argue that the 2023 regular season was better because they had wins against KC and Detroit in that season. Even though they won fewer games, at least there were signature wins in that season. I would argue that at least. And they peaked at the end of the season, which felt better than like this year, right? And then they won a playoff game last year. Like, at least it would have felt like, hey, they won 2 more games in the regular season. They won another playoff game. And then, yeah, maybe they get crushed by Detroit or whatever. And just like they, you know, lost to San Fran in the divisional round last year. At least it would have felt like, hey, it didn't take that step that you were hoping for, but at least they sort of treaded water a little bit and had a couple extra wins in the regular season. But that's not how this went. And we'll talk about the level of disappointment that was in this season in the whole. And we'll go over that, whether the season was a failure or not. We'll talk about that a little bit as well. But for me, the most frustrating aspect was the fact that this was the exact same formula for their losses all season long. 0-2 against Philly, 0-2 against Minnesota, 0-2 against Detroit. The 3 best teams in the conference, they go 0-6 against. And the Chicago Bears game, whether you want to erase it or not, whatever, that one is certainly far different than the other ones. It didn't matter. They didn't really play it like it mattered. We can put that one to the side. But when they went up against the best of the best, they went 0-6. And that's a problem, to say the least. When you go up against the best, I'm not like, listen, like you, they don't need to be 6-0 in those scenarios. Like, yeah, guess what? Spoiler alert. When you go against good teams, it's going to be difficult. You're going to lose some of those games. That's how it works. So it happens with most teams when they go up against good teams. But you gotta win one of them. You got to win a couple of them. You got to be competitive. You can't get eliminated in the first round of the playoffs. Like, those are the things that are really tough to swallow. The fact that they never really could win that big game, and the fact that it was the same story in all 6 of those games, that they bookended the season with losses against the same team. Very, very frustrating, to say the least. Why that happened, how that happened, we'll get to all of that as well. Let's talk about a positive really quick. Let's talk about our Luigi's Pizza player of the game, which was Josh Jacobs. We'll go through what he meant to this team in this game. There's nobody else that is deserving of this in this particular moment. He did everything that he could to really put this team on his back and say, listen, I know what we're doing on offense right now isn't working. Just get me the ball and I'll make it work. And he tried. Man, did he try. And you could tell how bad he wanted it. You could tell how bad, you know, how intense he was going into this game. You could tell that he was prepared mentally, physically, for what he needed to do to go out and get that win. And if even half the team, I think, played like Josh Jacobs did in this game, you're probably talking about a different outcome. I thought he was fantastic. He set the tone for everyone else. It's just unfortunate that most people, especially on offense, did not follow that same tone, but he did everything he could, made, you know, one of the great Packers playoff touchdown, or almost touchdown runs. It's too bad that couldn't have been a touchdown run. So it could have been, you know, exactly that, but that was an unbelievable run from him. Utilized him out of the backfield. Just a really impressive game from Josh Jacobs. And if you haven't tried a Luigi's pizza yet, even in defeat, I know it's not a Luigi's Victory Monday. I know we don't get a victory pizza, but sometimes you need a pizza to help you cope. I did. I ate a literal full Supreme pizza from Luigi's. I couldn't drink because I had all the stuff to do, the post-game show, recording this episode. So I had zero alcohol. So I ate my way through my anger with a full Luigi's pizza, and it still hit the spot. So if you haven't checked one out yet, make sure to do so. They're the absolute best. Luigi's frozen pizzas. You can find them on Twitter at Luigi's Pizza. And trust me, make it also part of your daily routine. I don't know, you know, if you can do a daily Luigi's pizza, but get as much in your diet as you can and you'll thank me later. They are the absolute best. Let's talk about what really doomed Green Bay in this game. 4 turnovers. That's a great place to start. Let's talk about this stupid way to start the game. You get the ball first. I talked about. I just wanted Green Bay to not win the toss so that we didn't have to second guess what Matt did. Should he have taken it? Should he have kicked? Should he have received? Should he have... I just wanted Philly to win the toss so that they could determine. So Philly wins the toss. I'm like, yes, here we go. And they decided to defer. Green Bay gets the ball first. I'm like, all right, let's go. Let's do this. And we talked about in the pregame show, we talked about it all week of how important it is to get off to a fast start. The excitement of the day and of the game did not get one play in. You kind of knew, right? You kind of knew right then and there. I am a pretty optimistic person during games. And even, you know, when they, especially after that Josh Jacobs touchdown, I'm like, oh, maybe this is the one that they can pull out when they have no right to win, other than usually when it's the other way around. And yeah, like I said, I'm usually pretty optimistic. I have to say, when Nixon lost the fumble, Philly recovers, and three plays later, they were up 7-0. You kind of felt exactly what was going to happen the rest of the way. You kind of knew, right? I'm not saying I gave up on the team. I'm not saying that I didn't think there were opportunities for them to get back in it, those sort of things. You just kind of knew in the back of your mind. Same story. Same thing played out. We can talk about the helmet to helmet. Now, Nixon does lower his helmet as well. I don't know if that played a factor in what they were thinking. My gut tells me they weren't about to throw the flag and then be like, oh, well, Keyshawn lowered his helmet as well. I think more often than not, if the referee gets a glimpse at that exact play, it gets called. And it's a 15-yard penalty, and Green Bay maintains the ball. And that's a probably totally different start to the game, totally different tone to the game. You know, you keep got it around right to like the 30. So now if it's a 15-yard penalty on top, like you're right around midfield to start off that drive. Instead, Philly gets it like first and 10 from the 30. And like three plays later, they're down 7-0. You know, the other thing too, of course, that we can talk about is the clear recovery. I thought there was a clear recovery. I can somewhat see, or maybe they thought, you know, he didn't have it for a full beat or something, and there was enough just tiny movement to say, hey, whoever came out of the pile with it, we're going to stand on that one. I thought there was enough visual evidence to clearly show that Green Bay and Nixon re-recovered the ball, was down by contact, and it should have been Green Bay's ball. What I will very much emphasize here is, yes, who knows the butterfly effect of what would have happened if Green Bay would have actually got the ball, especially if there was a 15-yard penalty on it, even if there's not, just got to keep it, right? Heck, if they go 3-and-out and punt the ball away, it still is a different ball game than, you know, the fumble there, and three plays later, you're down 7-0. Well, unfortunately, Green Bay season is over, but that doesn't mean that the winning on Prize Picks needs to come to an end. The divisional round is one of the best weekends in sports, and right now on Prize Picks, you can win up to 1,000 times your money, and that's because Prize Picks is the best place to get real money action while watching the playoffs. Prize Picks also offers a variety of weekly promotions that can lead to big payouts, and don't forget that there are plenty of other sports available to play as well, and it's never a bad time to get in on the basketball action. This week, I'm going with both Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson to put on a show, Saquon Barkley to continue his ridiculous tear, and Amon-Ra St. Brown to once again dominate with multiple receptions. The best part is that you can download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup by using code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. Run your game. But what I will say about this is I'm not making this even remotely about the referees in this one. There really is no doubt to me who the better team on this day was. Philly was the better team. And they played far from a perfect game, especially offensively. They were pretty rusty. The Jalen Hurts rust was, I think, a real thing. Their passing offense never got going. Kudos to Green Bay's defense as well. But the better team won that game. I don't know of anyone that could look me in the eye and be like, actually, I think Green Bay was the better team and Green Bay deserved to win that game. That's a pretty tough bridge to cross to get to an idea that Green Bay was the better team on that day. Again, yeah, maybe if they get that call right away, maybe it looks different, feels different, the vibe is different. Who the hell knows? But it would be hard for me to say that Green Bay was the better team and they got robbed in this game. they hurt themselves far more than any referee decision in this particular game. So yes, do I think that that should have been a penalty? Yes, probably. At least I could have seen it being a penalty. Do I think it should have been a clear and obvious recovery? Yes, it was not. I don't think Green Bay got robbed in this game. I think the better team won. As much as that pains me to say, but I think that's probably the truth. And not to mention then, you know, Green Bay followed that up with three interceptions throughout the course of the day. They were -4 in turnovers. I mean, -4 in turnovers. They had 8 penalties for 85 yards. They had completely poor special teams performance and a missed field goal from, what, inside 35? You start with a fumble and then a 7-0 deficit. You had multiple key missed tackles. You couldn't do anything consistent on offense. Just mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake. It gets you beat, especially against good teams, especially on the road, especially in the playoffs. I mean, you go through, what was our pregame, you know, to-do list, right? Get to a fast start. Nope, that one's out. Play free and easy going. Nope, that didn't happen. Win the line of scrimmage. There were moments. There were moments I thought they held up decently well against Saquon, and that Eagles offensive line got a little bit of pressure at times. Got Josh Jacobs going later in the game than you would have liked, but got him going at some point. Pass protection wasn't great in this one. So there's some ups and downs on the line of scrimmage. Self-inflicted wounds. Nope. Tons of those again. You know, explosive plays, advantage Philly in that. Quarterback play and accuracy, quite frankly, neither of them were good, but Love was worse. Edgerrin Cooper, it seemed like, had a good game, solid game. Who can step up at wide receiver? The answer was basically nobody. Jeff Hafley, I think, did have a better Jalen Hurts plan. The game management stuff didn't play a huge role in this one, although there were a couple things from Matt I thought could have been a little bit better, but didn't play a massive role. Learn from your mistakes? Nope. And just win? Nope. Like the to-do list went right out the window pretty much right as this game got started. So the mistakes, once again, doomed Green Bay. Now, on the margins, if you take out the penalties, if you take out the dumb mistakes, if you take away the turnovers, right? On the margins, Green Bay, 60 plays, 302 yards. Philly, 47 plays, 290 yards. Or I think it was 57 plays, 290 yards. 5.0 yards per play for Green Bay, 5.1 for Philly. 195 passing yards for Green Bay, only 121 net passing yards for Philly. 5.6 yards per pass for Green Bay, 5.1 yards per pass for Philly. 107 rushing yards for Green Bay, 169 for Philly, 149 if you take away that final drive, which everyone was just done at that point anyway. 4.3 yards per rush for Green Bay, 4.8 for Philly, again, without that final drive, which included 2 Saquon runs and a kneel down. So take those 3 plays away, 4.8 yards per carry. So like, this was not a completely different game in the margins without the mistakes. These were 2 pretty similar offenses, 2 pretty similar defenses, pretty evenly matched. And it came down once again to which team was going to make bigger mistakes. And it wasn't even close. I mean, Green Bay just made a billion of them. And Philly really took good care of the football and didn't make any catastrophic mistakes almost through the entirety of this game. And that was the difference in the game. Turnovers, penalties, mistakes, self-inflicted wounds, missed field goals. About the only mistake Philly had in any major way was the missed extra point. There just wasn't much on top of that. Now, again, far from perfect execution, and Green Bay's defense deserves a lot of credit for that. But from a big mistake standpoint, just very, very few for Philly and a ton for Green Bay. As for Jordan Love, let's talk about him. 20 of 33, 212 yards, no touchdowns, 3 interceptions, another near interception on his very first throw of the day that should have been picked off by CJ Gardner-Johnson. At a 37.2 QBR, a 41.5 quarterback rating, and a 55.7 preliminary grade from PFF, which is below average and seems rather generous based on his overall performance. Clearly, this was not good enough from Jordan Love. I have no idea his level of, you know, injury and how much his elbow and, you know, knee injury from the past and groin injury from the past. Maybe those aren't bothering him at all. Maybe they bothered him a lot. I have no idea. I'm not making excuses for it. And I will say that this was very clearly a very poor performance from Jordan and not good enough in a playoff setting. You needed really good Jordan Love and you got really bad Jordan Love. In his last 3 games, now granted, part of that was a game against Chicago where he didn't finish, right? But 46 of 75, 61.3% completion percentage, 466 yards, one touchdown, three interceptions. On the season, 288 of 458, 62.9% completion percentage, did not get it to 63%, 3,601 yards, 25 touchdowns, 14 picks. It's pretty, average, blah. It's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. It's fine. It's okay. Injury certainly played a part, but not the season that I think we were hoping for Jordan. And here is the big number that I will get you. If you want to take away one thing from today's show, this is a major issue, and this is the biggest thing, in my opinion, that's going to need to get corrected in 2025. This is per Brett Coleman, who got this from PFF, I believe. And he was tweeting about getting some numbers from PFF, so I believe he got these from PFF. Jordan Love stats on true dropback passing this season. So what true dropback passing is not including play action, not including RPOs, and not including screenplays, all right? So you're doing a three-step drop, a five-step drop, or a seven-step drop. You're getting to your drop and you're ripping it. It's not, again, any sort of play action, screen pass, or RPO. Just a clean three, five, seven-step drop and rip the ball, all right? That's what you're looking at when we say true dropbacks. On true dropbacks this season, per Brett Coleman, 57.7% completion percentage, which is very bad. 15 touchdowns, 15 interceptions. Now, you might say he only had 14 interceptions. That's per PFF. So if there was like a interception that got called back via penalty or something like that, PFF considers that still. So they had him at 15 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, 7.5 yards per game. Yards per attempt. My apologies. 7.5 yards per attempt and 77.6 quarterback rating. That ranks 26th amongst eligible starting quarterbacks in completion percentage, 27th in quarterback rating, and was the worst touchdown to interception ratio amongst all starting quarterbacks. That's the number one thing that needs to get fixed. What that is telling you, just to break it down in simplest terms, again, 57.7% completion percentage, 15 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, 7.5 yards per attempt, and 77.6 passer rating. What that tells you is when there's not a play action, an RPO, or a screen, and Jordan Love is just dropping back to pass, it's been very unsuccessful for Green Bay. When we got to the end of 2023, Jordan hit his drop, ripped the ball, and when that screen panned on the TV copy to the receiver down the field, you just knew there was going to be a receiver at the end of it and something good was happening. And you almost got the opposite feel of that this year. When Jordan Love just went to simply drop back to pass, it was very inefficient for Green Bay and it was extremely inefficient for Jordan Love. That has to change. That is 1A. You cannot operate this offense without a dropback quarterback who can hit his drops, rip the ball, and be accurate on time and hit his receivers as needed, and certainly cannot have a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. That is going to have to get fixed. That'll be job 1A for this Packers offense and job 1A for Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur. Speaking of Matt LaFleur, not good enough from him in this game, just having his team ready to go, making the same mistakes over again. And I thought overall these last few games have been some of Matt's worst work. Do I believe that there needs to be a comeuppance, a firing, a let's go nuclear and get this thing nuked to the ground and build it back up? No, I don't believe that. I believe that Matt has earned the opportunity to learn from these mistakes, to grow from them, and get better from them. Wholeheartedly believe that. I still believe that Matt is a very good coach. I believe that he will get better. I believe that just like progress isn't linear for a team, I believe you can have blips in the radar as a coach, but that is very, very clear that there are things that Matt needs to do better. There needs to be a level of self-reflection within the organization as to how they can make those steps to be better going forward. But Matt has earned the right to make those corrections, make those adjustments, and have this team playing better next year. And I truly believe that he will. But now, what the performances from Matt and Jordan and the team at the end of this year by losing three consecutive games, not winning a big game, going 1-6 in the division, no playoff wins, what that opens is Pandora's box to a variety of different questions for who this team is and what they can become in 2025. I think it's beyond ridiculous to think that there are going to be any overarching decisions on Jordan Love's future, Matt LaFleur's future, anything like that, based on where Green Bay is at right now. But What I will agree with is now the questions are rightfully out there of what can this team be? Who can Jordan Love become? Which quarterback is Jordan? Is it the 2023 version where we saw really good stuff a little bit in the middle of this season? Is it the other versions where it's very inconsistent? Is this just who he is, where you might get a Hall of Famer one week and, you know, TJ Rubley the next week? I don't know. But now those questions are out there, and this is something that Matt and Jordan are going to have to answer in a pretty significant way next year. If you know, and I think that is what's going to tell us where this team is at, where the coaching staff is at, where Jordan is at. To me, I think it is crazy to say that anyone has a final determination on who Jordan Love is as a QB. I think that's insane. I think it's fair to question. I very much think it's fair to question, but I think to have a final, and that goes both ways. I think if there's anyone that just says unquestioning Jordan Love is a top 10 quarterback, he's going to be the like unquestioned future of this team. And he's going to be the unquestioned future of this team, probably in some capacity because of the contract. And I still, by the way, I am on that side. I like closer to that side. I think he's going to be a good starting quarterback in this league. How good? That's a question mark, but I think he's going to be a good to really good starter in this league still. I really do. It's not just hope or copium. I really believe that he has the ability to be that. I do think injuries affected him this year. Even if it weren't the injuries actually affecting him, the injuries that, you know, kind of took him out of his rhythm, had him questioning some things, I think that did play a factor into this year. I think he will bounce back next year in a significant way. But to just say unquestioned, like, yep, we're good. This is a top 10 quarterback, no questions asked. I think that's probably a bit wishful thinking. To go the opposite end and say he's toast, he's garbage, he's not a good QB, he's never going to be a good QB, anything like that, I think that's even more garbage. I think there's different ways that this can go. I think he can take another step, and I think he can show us that the end of 2023 and the good signs that we saw in 2024 are the real Jordan Love. And with a healthy season and maybe an additional weapon or two, he can go out and have that tear again. I think it's fair to question if, you know, he comes back and plays this sort of same way, or like we see a inconsistent Jordan Love again next year with fundamentals and all those sort of things, as to whether or not that's ever going to change. That might just be who he is. And maybe ends up being the 20th best quarterback in the league. 23rd, 19th, 18th, somewhere in that range, which is probably not good enough. Probably not going to get you that Super Bowl that you want. All right. But I don't think you can make that determination as of yet. And there's also the third possibility of that. Again, this just is who he is. He's a streaky quarterback. And when things look good, they're going to look really freaking good. And you just hope you get that really freaking good for a 4-game stretch in the postseason at some point. And there, like I said, there might be times where he looks like Joe Montana, and might be times where he looks like TJ Rubley. Or for the younger kids, times where he looks like, Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson in their prime, and times where he looks like, I don't know, name some, you know, Danny Dimes, you know, in his, with all of his issues that he has had. That might just be who he is. But I do believe we will find out a lot more about that in 2025. I think to jump to either end of the spectrum in a significant way is probably not really being truthful and fair to the evaluation at this point. I think there's legitimate questions. And as far as Matt goes and where the team goes, I think how this team performs in 2025 will shape this conversation moving forward. If this team bounces back and takes a big step forward next year, and this team, you know, makes a major run in the playoffs or looks unbelievable in the regular season and picks up a couple wins in the playoffs or whatever, I mean, again, this guy's not going anywhere. He's proven himself by every measure save for winning the Super Bowl. So that would go a long way in solidifying his status as head coach. If it's, you know, a season where you are up and down again, get one, you know, maybe playoff win, losing the divisional round once again, it's going to be like, all right, is this the ceiling? Is this as good as it's going to get? And then again, those conversations start having a little bit more of like, is this an okay upside to have? And then you have the possibility that you take a step back or a significant step back, in which case those conversations about Jordan and Matt intensify in a very significant way. But those conversations will be largely based upon how this team and Matt and Jordan perform in 2025, because there's been too much good from both of them to just be like, yep, we're good here. Seen all I need to see. And there's been enough things that make you go, all right, like there's some things that need to get worked on. And if they don't get improved, it might be a problem. But they have both earned the right. And I mean, again, Jordan's not, nothing's changing with Jordan on his status. Nothing's certainly going to happen with Matt this offseason. So let's see what 2025 brings. But I think some of those questions are now out there. They're in the ether. They're fair. And now Jordan, Matt, and the organization are going to have to prove that they can take that step forward in 2025. As far as, you know, Matt goes, one of the things I really hated in this game, and I don't know if it had anything to do with Jordan's injury. I hated the shotgun offense early in this one. I wanted to see more under center. I wanted to see more play action. I wanted to see more Josh Jacobs playing with Jordan under center. I just hated all the shotgun stuff that they came out with in this one. Felt like later in the game, second half, under center, running the football, quick passing game, that worked. I feel like it would have worked earlier in the game too if they had gone to it a little bit sooner. I really disliked how they came out in this game, did a lot of shotgun offense. We talked about Josh Jacobs, 18 carries, 81 yards, a touchdown, 4.5 yards per carry, three catches, 40 yards, 21 total touches, 121 yards and a touchdown, 40.1% of Green Bay's total net yardage. 40.1% was Josh Jacobs. And quite frankly, I thought it might be more than that. He showed up, he carried this team. He showed the leadership on the field of how everyone needs to go about their business. Wish just more people would have played it that way. Josh Jacobs did. A lot of the rest of the team did not. And I have a ton of respect for how Josh Jacobs tried to put this team on his back and get them across the finish line. Just didn't have enough. And I think got a little bit banged up at the end there too, which certainly didn't help either. Also want to give credit to Jeff Hafley. Listen, you limited the Eagles to 22 points. You mostly contained Saquon Barkley. The pass offense for Philly was almost completely non-existent. A lot of the big plays from Philly, look at the Dallas Goedert play and a couple of the big Saquon Barkley runs, were completely blown, missed tackles by the defense. Jeff Hafley usually had them in a position to succeed, and players did not go out and execute. So to me, again, that's a positive for Jeff Hafley, less so for the players going out and executing. I would have liked to have maybe seen a turnover, but I do feel like Jeff Hafley had this defense ready to play, had a great play design and defensive design for this game. And yeah, I thought that was a great sign for this defense moving forward. I think they should even get, you know, better in year two of Jeff Hafley, but I thought that was a really positive game plan and performance from Jeff Hafley and his defense. Rough day for Carrington Valentine, multiple missed tackles on Saquon Barkley, big, awful play against Dallas Goedert. Gave up multiple completions. Just a tough day at the office for CV, who's been playing some really good football as of late. This was not one of those games. Kudos to Xavier McKinney for talking to him, giving him the expectations and all that sort of thing. I love that leadership on the sideline, but this was definitely a hang with him for Carrington Valentine. He'll bounce back, but today was a tough day for him. Injuries were definitely a story here too. Devontae Wyatt goes out. Elton Jenkins goes out. Romeo Doubs goes out. Jaden Reed goes out. Josh Myers goes out. Looked like Rashawn Gary and Quay Walker and Josh Jacobs all were banged up at the end as well. Just a nightmare of injuries. Hopefully none of them are anything that are going to carry into the beginning of next year. You don't want to see that, but it was crazy to see all the injuries. And listen, the left guard play in this one was a nightmare. Elton Jenkins had a really bad pressure that he allowed early in this game. Then they bring in Travis Glover. He has three, four penalties right away. And then Telford comes in. He's got multiple penalties. Just a nightmare from left guard. And then Zach Tom, especially early in this game, looked like he had one of the worst games of his career. Just not good enough in so many different ways. And the offensive line had definitely something to do with that as well, especially that left guard position. And again, an uncharacteristic game from Zach Tom. Special teams, pretty brutal. You have the fumble to begin the game. You had a bad return and a holding penalty on that bad return. Brandon McManus missed a short field goal. You had a kick return that only got out to the 22-yard line. You had a kick return that Keyshawn Nixon failed to field in the field of play, which made it that they only got the ball at the 20-yard line. Just some really ridiculous special team stuff. Jaden Reed did have a 20-yard return, but it certainly did not mitigate all the other problems for the Packers on special teams in this game. As far as where Green Bay goes from here, I am a very firm believer that you don't need a full teardown and build back up. You have a foundation set. Progress is not linear, but Green Bay needs to take a real significant look at what went well, what went wrong, how to make those corrections, and how to be a better team. And it takes a little bit from everyone. I think Goody needs to be a bit better on identifying and finding high-end talent in the draft. I think Edgerrin Cooper, Evan Williams are probably a good start to that, but he needs to continue to get better there. Two huge signings from him in McKinney and Josh Jacobs. But if you look at the homegrown talent, it has not been good enough at the elite level to make this team something special. That needs to change. Matt, we talked about, there needs to be some cleanup on his end for how he is coaching this team, having the pulse of the team and getting them motivated going into big games and getting them to make the corrections on the mistakes that continue to happen through the course of the season. I think there's players that need to be better, including Jordan Love. There's a lot going on that needs to get better if this team wants to be a legitimate contender. But to me, to nuke that and tear it down and to try to start from scratch is the exact wrong way to go here. And maybe that ends up being the case. And maybe it's an awful 2025. And, you know, there are those of you that will say, look at, I told you so. Okay. It could end up happening that way. It could end up where Matt and Jordan and Brian and this group just never puts it together. And they're going to have to make that change at some point. I think to give up on it now would be an insane decision, a absolutely ridiculous decision. That is how bad franchises get made, is by making immediate reactions and by, consistently churning your major positions at quarterback, GM, head coach, and just living in limbo and in purgatory as a bad franchise. That's what bad franchises do. That's what really bad franchises do, especially when you've had the winning, overall win rate and success that Goody and Matt have had at GM and coach, respectively. They've earned the right to make sure that it gets better next year. And then if it doesn't, we have those conversations. But those conversations do not need to be had as of yet. But a long, hard look at what is going okay, what is going wrong, and how to be better in 2025 certainly does need to take place. I do feel like there's plenty of reasons for optimism. Youngest team in the league, back-to-back playoff seasons, learned some hard lessons, although I will argue that they actually have to learn from them and get better from those lessons. They have a bunch of cap space that they're going to be able to spend money. They have no major potential free agent losses. They had a big step from Jeff Hafley in the defense that should be better in year two. Thought Sean Ryan and Tucker Kraft were two guys that really took a step forward. Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney were massive free agent signings and two huge pieces of this team moving forward. Edgerrin Cooper and Evan Williams look awesome. Javon Bullard and Jordan Morgan likely will remain starters going into next year. There are a lot of things to be positive about, but also with the understanding that it's not good enough yet. And it needs to get better if they want to be a legitimate contender, which we all want this team to be. And certainly the Packers want this team to be. Is 2024 and is this team a failure? I lean a little bit more in that direction. I think disappointment is the right word. I don't know that I would go completely to failure. I would certainly not say that this season was a success. I think it was a disappointment. I think the fact that there weren't more players that took a step forward, that so many players regressed or stayed status quo, that you went 1-5 in the division, almost 0-6 in the division, didn't win a playoff game, went 0-6 in your premium games. That is disappointing. I don't think it's a failure, but I do think it's very disappointing. And I'm hoping for better in 2025. What 2025 brings, your guess is as good as mine. It's going to be a fun one. Like I said, there's going to be some free agent decisions. Green Bay should have the money to go out and buy a couple big time players if they want to go in that direction. The draft is going to be fun. It's going to be in Green Bay. And I can promise you that we here at Packaday will have it covered 365 days a year. Thank you again for all of your support. I wish Green Bay had won. As I mentioned, they have some cleanup on aisle 1265 that needs to get done. They're going to have to figure out how they take that next step. Year three for Aaron was when they won the Super Bowl. Year three for Brett, they were still in that 9-7 range for the first three seasons with Brett. Jordan's got two seasons that they get to the playoffs, and now we'll see what his year three brings in this particular era. And hopefully it is a step in the right direction. Again, progress not always linear, and sometimes you take one step back to take two steps forward. I'm ready for Green Bay to take two steps forward this offseason, and I'll say it one more time. We've got you covered for everything 365 days a year. So again, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. We'll break it all down for you bit by bit, piece by piece. We'll get into the tape this week. We'll go over, everything that went wrong with Justice Mosqueda and all the other great guests That's going to do it for me for now. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, Mo Sada, Minnesota, and PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handel, Donna Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, Dave McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Wong, Arnaldo Espinoza, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, Step Keat, Love and Football, Dylan Patscott, Bobby Santoro, SoCal Pack, Allison Tuckwab, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing. Thank you so much. Enjoy your Monday. Wish it was a victory Monday. It is not. Go Rams. That would be a nice consolation, I guess, to some extent. If the Rams could pick up a win, knock Minnesota out, I would take that one as a forgiveness from the football gods for having us sit through that crap fest of a game. But until next time, and as always, go Pack, go. And tonight, go Rams.